From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine.
Maybe you saw this advertisement that lit the internet up a few months ago. But in case not, let me describe it. Okay, so the scene opens in hell. We see flames, we hear screams, then the camera closes in on Satan himself. Big horns, giant pecs, bright red skin, and he's just slumped over on his throne looking bored. Then his phone buzzes and he glances at the screen and it says, "You're a match." So Satan perks up, his eyes wide in excitement. And this is when we figure out that Satan is on Match, looking for love. So cut two. There's a bridge underpass in a park on Earth, trees, and it's quiet and it's nice out. And Satan's just standing around waiting to meet his date. Then a woman approaches and he says,
"Hi, 2-0.
Please."
She jumps in and delivers the punchline.
"Call me 2020.
Satan has matched with a woman named 2020. That is the joke. And then from there, it is montage time. Satan and 2020 picnicking in an empty football stadium, doing yoga at an empty gym and stealing toilet paper. And anyway, it is brilliant. It's really funny. And when it debuted online in December of 2020, just massive love. Just everyone went crazy for it. And you know who knew all this time this was going to be a great ad? I'll tell you who.
We really want to bend, not break, right? You want to be able to comment on something.
This is Ryan Reynolds.
Something like that without getting sort of lost in the muck and the mire of it. You want to be able to comment on something without being disrespectful to the grimness of.
You and most people probably know Ryan Reynolds as an actor, Deadpool, etc. But people in the branding and advertising world increasingly know Ryan as one of the guys behind the smartest and most viral ads of the last few years. In this case, he co-wrote and produced this spot for his marketing company, Maximum Effort, which has become one of the hottest in the advertising game. It's a super interesting story. Ryan, he used to think of marketing as an obligation and one that he wasn't really involved in. I mean, he would be in a movie and he would have to go out and promote the movie, but you know, the people who were actually doing it and thinking about it were these people in a room with him that were saying all this stuff.
I think it was mainly about, you know, why would I have any authorship over the promotional work and marketing work that I'm doing when you hear these people and they speak about data and stats and testing and scores.
And he was just like, "I don't know what you guys are talking about." But then something happened. He spent a decade trying to turn the oddball Marvel superhero Deadpool into a movie. And even when 20th Century Fox finally got on board, the studio remained skeptical of its potential. So Ryan teamed up with one of the studio's marketing execs, a guy named George Dewey, who had spent 15 years at the ad giant McCann. And they launched a ridiculous guerrilla campaign that stirred up so much excitement that Deadpool became the highest grossing R-rated movie of all time. And so did its sequel. And then Ryan started thinking about marketing quite differently.
We really started to look at marketing as a completely different tool that we had in the shed and something that we could really, you know, tell stories with, but also have so much fun doing at the time. So that's really what changed. That was back in, you know, that really started for me in 2014, but really just changed how I look at all of this. I mean, now I look at marketing as, you know, one of the great joys of my life and my business and the things that I'm fortunate enough to be a part of. You know, they're all coupled quite beautifully with marketing and that kind of thought process.
After that great Deadpool experience, Ryan and George Dewey decided to join forces and build Maximum Effort, which has since produced consistent viral gems for a range of projects, including Ryan's own companies. He's an owner of Aviation Gin and the low-cost wireless company Mint Mobile, for example. And anyway, this is why I really wanted Ryan on the cover of Entrepreneur Magazine, because he has figured something out. He has unlocked a key to how to make something go viral. And yeah, Ryan himself is in the commercials sometimes, but not all the time. He was not in that Match ad. And in fact, he's often doing ads that are pretty simple. They're not high budget. They're not crazy. There are not explosions all over the place. They're just smart and fun and get people talking. And so what's the secret to that? That is what I wanted to talk to Ryan about. And so we did it. He is on the cover of the March 2021 issue, and I talked to him for it. And it was just, originally, I want to stress, the audio that you're hearing of him is from this conversation that I had with Ryan. He was on location in Vancouver shooting a movie and had stepped away to talk with me for an hour. And originally, this was really just for the print story. So we didn't record it as if it's a podcast. It was really quite laid back and conversational and wasn't really meant to be heard. But frankly, after we had this conversation and the story ran and it got such a good response, I went back to his team and I said, hey, do you mind if we use this audio in the podcast so people can hear the whole thing? Because I just think it's really valuable to absorb everything that Ryan has to say. And they were kind enough to say yes. So on this episode of Problem Solvers, you're going to hear the full conversation with Ryan. We dig into the creative process of storytelling and advertising making, and also his thoughts on the value of having restrictions and tight budgets. And we also even transition into some great leadership talk where Ryan speaks about how he embraces what he does not know. It's just really, really valuable stuff. And I am just delighted to have had the conversation with Ryan and to bring it to you. So that is what we're going to get into after the break. We all want to know that we have enough energy to get where we want to go. For example, you either have enough energy to run a marathon or you're on the side of the road wheezing. How about your startup? Does it have enough cloud computing to win and handle the really big customers? You might think stable, enterprise-ready cloud infrastructure like Oracle's is out of reach for your company, but Oracle for Startups was made just for you. Oracle wants to help you land those big customers, so they're offering preferred pricing on enterprise cloud for startups. Free cloud credits and 70% off their cloud services, and with multi-cloud support and no vendor lock-in, so you can build it out any way you want. Oracle for Startups doesn't want you wheezing on the side of the road. They want you to have enough power to scale and land your dream customer. So, how do you get it? All you do is go to oracle.com/go-to/problem-solvers. Again, that is oracle.com/go-to, G-O-T-O, go-to/problem-solvers. All right, we're back. So on this episode, Ryan Reynolds on the art of advertising, among other things. And I'm just going to jump right into it. When I was talking to Ryan, I floated this theory by him at the very beginning of our conversation because he had told me this bit about how he originally didn't think of marketing as an opportunity, and then eventually he did. And I asked him if that was, in a way, like if the switch in his brain there was about storytelling, because he comes from the world of storytelling, acting as storytelling, and maybe he didn't originally see marketing as a storytelling opportunity, but of course it is. And then once he became aware of that, he realized how fun it could be and how much opportunity there could be. And he said, yeah, there's some truth to that.
Everything is storytelling. I don't care how big or how small. It's all got to feel like a story. And if you're not paying attention to that, then you're just broadcasting and you're not engaging an audience. And, you know, I really believe, and I'm sure you've heard me say this before, that every single person is a media company. Every single person has social media and an ability to broadcast their message and your message should they choose to do so. So it's giving people an opportunity to feel like they have some authorship over something that you're creating and that they're a part of its success, and doing so in a way that isn't so clandestine as I think traditional storytelling and marketing, which is that, you know, let's find a way to sneak the message that we're trying to get across into sort of that line about how Shakespeare would smuggle poetry into popular works. Well, like, we're kind of the opposite, which is that we really just feel like when somebody's watching an ad or a commercial, there's no reason that ad or commercial cannot feel extremely entertaining and inventive and fun. And B, there's no reason that we can't say within that property or piece of content that it is a commercial. That, mm-hmm. you know, so that's been the fun thing, is kind of leaning into the things that a lot of people traditionally lean away from, which is that, hey, this is an ad. We are, you know, acknowledging and playing with the cultural landscape in this ad. And we are telling you that we're doing that. And it allows people to be a part of it in a, I think, a pretty interesting and fun way.
And just to jump in here, what Ryan is referencing here is that many of the ads that he produces are very self-aware. They're ads that are very explicitly ads, like this.
Hey there, it's Ryan Reynolds. Every holiday, wireless companies spend billions on promo commercials. But at Mint, we find innovative ways to do things, like partnering with Cameo.
Okay, so Ryan is sitting in this big comfortable chair. There's a fireplace behind him. He lifts up the phone and it's Cameo, which is this app where you can order videos from people. And Gary Busey's face is on the phone. And then Gary says,
"Hi, this Cameo is for America from a little girl named Matt Mobile. Mobile is a good name, like Mobile, Alabama."
And anyway, it goes on like that. So follow-up question to Ryan.
Your ads are very often extremely self-aware. Where did that, can you trace the origin of that decision?
It just depends on what it is we're doing. I mean, you know, some of the companies that I own, Aviation and Mint Mobile, not the least of which, those companies, I feel an obligation to be transparent. That doesn't mean that transparency can't be soaked in irony or self-awareness or silliness or a lot of different things. But so when it's me out front for those companies, usually I'm playing with preconceived notions about an image or just notions about celebrity or notions about the commercial space. So it's a lot of that stuff. But then when we just have an idea for something, you know, our Match.com spot is a great example of like just having an idea that we really wanted to tell. I'm on the board of directors at Match.com. So they asked if I had something for them. And for me, I love an assignment. I love an idea of like, okay, what could we do here? And I did a bit of a deep dive on what they'd done previously and what worked, what didn't work. And George Dewey, my partner, and I sat and came up with this idea. And once we had the idea, I quickly grabbed my laptop, wrote the entire thing out. And I don't think we changed a word of it until we were in post.
So then I asked Ryan about the creative process of creating that ad. And when I asked him, I really was just thinking about the creative process of creating any ad. But as it turns out, that one in particular represented this broader philosophy that Ryan has about how to walk up to potentially sensitive issues that everyone feels attached to, and then play it in a way that's going to unite and not divide people. So here's him talking about that.
We really want to bend, not break, right? You want to be able to comment on something like that without getting sort of lost in the muck and the mire of it. You want to be able to comment on something without being disrespectful to the grimness of that situation as well. Mm-hmm. So you got to give yourself some guardrails. And I love guardrails. I love problems. George loves problems. That's the problems are our best friend because they really inspire ideas and ways to create. If you just keep throwing money at something, I mean, that showbiz will teach you that. Like if you keep throwing money at a problem, that problem is only going to be exacerbated and made worse. If you instead get inventive and replace like a story issue in a film or any kind of story that you're telling with character and infuse it with a genuine moment, then you've now created something much better than you had before. So I just always love confinement. I love problems. I love it when there's some kind of barrier, even if it's just like our budget has to be X or this, when it's albeit small, we can still get the job done and we have to think outside the box in order to deliver something that is great quality. It's just that to me is fun. So I love problems. And that comes from producing movies. That really comes from, particularly in the movies I produce, I try to keep budgets at a pretty reasonable level and over deliver and under promise, not just to the studio, but to an audience. So that's always sort of the MO going into these things.
Yeah. So that reminds me of something I saw you say that you described those boundaries, the restrictions as a real benefit that you had in marketing Aviation Gin, because you have a smaller marketing budget than many competitors who have been around for longer. And you felt like that was what pushed you guys to be ever more creative. Mm-hmm. Can you speak a little more to that? Like how, because that's something that every entrepreneur is wrestling with, right? I so many people have told me that one of their greatest concerns is that they're going up against large competitors. They don't have the kind of marketing dollars that those competitors do. So how can they possibly compete for attention? And the idea of restrictions as an asset is, I think, a really powerful one. Can you share more about that?
Well, let me preface that with taking some of what I'm saying with a grain of salt. Like, you know, if I have $30,000 to shoot an ad for Aviation Gin that I really want to go viral, $30,000 is not a lot of money to get what I need done and accomplished. Sure. But $30,000 to anyone walking down the street is still a shit ton of money.
Totally.
So,
of course.
I
recognize the differences in scale here.
Yeah, that these problems are uptown problems, but they still can prove challenging and difficult. So yes, it's great. I think it actually is great because if somebody says, okay, you have $10 million to go shoot an ad for Aviation Gin, well, like immediately the reflex for most people who have some aspect of control over production would say, okay, so let's start with some helicopter shots. The city's in peril. A superhero comes and lands and uses a skyscraper to block out the alien ship that's on its way. You know, you're like, you're immediately, your brain goes to scale. The scope and scale, but like scope and scale can be character too. Like scope and scale can be so many lessons. Shooting Deadpool to me were driven home time and time again. Every time the studio took money away from our budget, we replaced whatever set piece we'd just lost with character. And then eventually that became the hallmark and defining characteristic of that property. Was people don't remember saving the world kind of nonsense. They remember the motor mouse. They remember what he said or how he reacted to a moment as opposed to a car chase or a huge set piece in an aircraft carrier. It becomes much more about character. So like that to me is a lesson that is worth its weight in gold, because you can penetrate the zeitgeist and make an impression without spending a ton of money, without busting the bank or creating kind of hollowed superficial scale and scope. You can do it just as well with by saying something. I mean, we live in a world that's so reactionary. There's a lot to play with there without being divisive, because that's another tenet of our work, is that we don't want to be divisive. There's enough of that out there. We really like, I know it sounds super saccharine and maybe a little nauseating. It certainly is nauseating to say, but when we talk about our company's MO, we talk about it bringing people together. So when we talk to Match.com and they're nervous about this pitch we have about, well, hold on, you're going to have your lead character is Satan and a woman named 2020, or hold on. You have to reassure them that we're not here to divide. We are here to embrace something and bring people together over a common experience. And that to me is super powerful. Emotion travels just as well as humor, if not better. So, you know, when people have an emotional response to something or find something incredibly funny, it travels. And then now you have people who, again, our media companies, every single person who's walking down the street sharing a story that you created, knowing it's an ad, but sharing it nonetheless. That's an amazing thing to have happen. I mean, for me, that's everything right there.
I love that answer. And as you were saying it, I was thinking about the various work that I've seen you guys do. And I mean, obviously the Match.com one was ambitious in its production. There's lots of different scenes. And again, the Satan makeup, the character was really built. But a lot of stuff is you in a room, right? Or you and somebody else in a room. And it is not actually a heavily produced thing. It's really, like you said, all about the character. And I hadn't quite thought about that before. It's almost as if, and I put this to you as a kind of another theory for you to react to. It's kind of like, if you have a large budget, you tend to spend it on all the things around the person that you've put in the scene. But if you take that away, then you have to pour it into the one thing that you have, which is the person in the scene. And what you're saying is, don't forget that that's what people remember most anyway.
Yeah, I think audiences are kind of numbed to spectacle. Spectacle being anything that you see in your standard Hollywood action movie. Mm-hmm. We need more spectacle. You'll often hear people say that. And it's like, well, no, what we need is more character. Character is the stuff you remember. We've all seen superheroes save the day. We've all seen a city in peril because an alien is attacking. We've all seen that kind of stuff that, you know, is a little eye-rolly. But I think what people really tend to remember is character. You know, and that to me is spectacle. That's the new spectacle. That's the thing that is meaningful to me. I mean, when we were working on our Peloton aviation gin ad.
Quick context here, I'm just going to offer in case you somehow missed this. In December of 2019, Peloton released this commercial.
A Peloton? Give it up for our first time ride.
All right, first ride. I'm a little nervous, but excited.
In the ad, this husband gives his wife, his very beautiful, already quite fit-looking wife, a Peloton, and then she basically spends a year filming herself slaving over this thing, and then films a video for him about how much it...
I didn't realize how much this would change me.
So anyway, the internet just got its knives out on this advertisement. The New York Times said that the ad was, quote, derided as sexist, classist, dystopian, and tone deaf, end quote. And Peloton's stock dropped 9% in one day. And then a couple days after the Peloton ad ran, out of nowhere, Ryan Reynolds tweets this ad for aviation gin, and it features that woman from the Peloton ad sitting at a bar looking shell-shocked with two friends, one on each side of her, and they like have no idea how to help her. And then the woman from the Peloton ad says,
"This gin is really smooth."
Yeah.
We can get you another one
if you like.
You're safe here.
And of course, this is internet gold. It was so perfectly timed. It was so funny. It was so on point. Everyone just went absolutely crazy for it. And okay, now you have the context for what Ryan is talking about. Back to Ryan.
I mean, when we were working on our Peloton Aviation Gin ad, all we were doing is really just acknowledging the cultural landscape in that moment and doing it in a way that doesn't attack Peloton. Maybe they would disagree, but that felt like a cultural misstep to a certain degree. People were making a story out of this thing. And I just thought there was such an interesting redemption to that. If we could find Monica Ruiz, the woman in the ad for Peloton, and give this a side B, give us another look at this person from maybe from a different perspective in a way that acknowledges and plays with the cultural landscape and the zeitgeist, but still is only there to have fun with it, not to further divide, not to wag our finger at anybody or vilify anybody, just acknowledge this thing. And I remember we found Monica. I believe I called her 4 or 5 different times because I think she was so nervous that this would backfire, that it's already so alienating when you are the subject of all of that energy and attention looking at you. These days, the internet can sometimes feel like rat shit and broken glass if you're the subject of that. So I think she was really nervous. So I had to keep kind of, I don't want to say talking her into it, but just trying to create a sense of safety that I knew would come on the other side of it. And it was one of those interesting things where I really had to kind of reiterate over and over again that this is actually a really beautiful answer to what just is going on with this other spot. And we had to do it within 48 hours of this kind of apex of this attention. So it was really where we kind of started talking about fast advertising and doing things with a kind of speed and agility that others can't, because Aviation Gin is owned by me. So I don't really have to go up some huge corporate ladder to get approvals. I can just say, let's do it. Let's shoot it right now. I'll pay for it out of my own money because it's not going to cost that much. We're just going to shoot it right away, get it done, and then get it out. And I remember hitting send on that as I was getting on a plane to Brazil and landing to not having any idea how this thing would hit, having a good feeling of it. But like, you know, and it worked like better than about anything I've ever done. It was just a really great moment, not just for me, but for everyone who works at Maximum Effort. It's totally one of those things that, wow, I'm proud to be a part of this. You know, everyone felt like that. It was a great moment.
And now, as Ryan surely understands, I have to take a short break for a word from our sponsor, but we will be back in a minute with more from Ryan Reynolds. Have you ever been frustrated with traditional business networking groups like BNI? You know, too many restrictions, consuming all of your time, and even penalizing you for missing meetings? Well, now there is a better way. It is Network Lead Exchange. With Network Lead Exchange, you still have the exclusivity and the opportunity to build local business connections, but with more flexibility. It doesn't require in-person meetings. In fact, most of its meetings are virtual and can be attended on the go from your office or even a job site. And on top of that flexibility, Network Lead Exchange is powered by a feature that allows members to communicate and send referrals to each other. This ensures that the networking never stops. Network Lead Exchange is looking to expand its footprint through franchising. So if you or anyone you know might be interested in growing with them, visit networkleadexchange.com/podcast. Again, that is networkleadexchange.com/podcast. All right, we're back. So where we left off, Ryan was talking about the experience of putting together that Peloton ad and also having to talk the woman from the Peloton ad into doing it, because he knew that it would be a really good experience. But of course, in the moment, it just seemed like a terrifying idea to her, which made me wonder something.
You just told me two different stories in which you walked up to something that felt like it could be, what's the right word? Confrontational, right? Which is Satan as your primary subject in a Match.com ad, and playing off of what was happening in the cultural conversation about Peloton, and then having to convince somebody that you mean well by it and that it's going to come out okay. What is your strategy for walking people into your vision so that they see that something that can feel a little scary is going to come out fine?
I think it's convincing them that I'm as risk averse, if not more than them. I mean, it's always about bending, not breaking. And it's always about feeling, I don't care where you land on the outrage spectrum on Twitter, but you really want to be able to do something where everyone feels like you're being provocative, but nobody feels like vilified, attacked, or nullified. So that's the thing, is just, again, it's like, it always comes back to that same edict. Let's bring people together. Let's filter everything that we do through a prism of joy as opposed to cynicism or division. I mean, division is very viral. That could be very fertile as well, but it's just not our bag. It's just that that would just feel like a absolute shit burger to me to be doing that. And it's boring. I don't really find it that interesting. So for us, it's a lot about that. And then when we look at our, when I look at Maximum Effort and I look at Mint and aviation and all these different things that I'm involved, particularly Mint Mobile, growing that has been such a pleasure. I mean, I love, again, it's like another weird white space that you don't hear about too often, which is that celebrities get backing companies or being a part of companies, or in my case, owning companies that are pragmatic and practical as opposed to aspirational and luxurious. I think that there's something super sexy and fun and cool about practicality and pragmatism. And Mint Mobile is a company that basically delivers an essential service for a fraction of the cost of the big carriers. And so for me, it was just a no-brainer to be a part of that, to put the entire muscle of my company, Maximum Effort, behind that and work on that. And then if I'm zooming out even farther, I look at our company and our goal is to radically improve, but you don't just radically improve just on creative, because everyone, other people are going to have great ideas. Our goal is to radically improve in new and inventive ways. These are the conversations that we're having now, the different spaces that we're looking to get into and explore has been such a fun and exciting process for me, but a huge learning process for me as well.
Just to sort of follow up to what you were saying, number one, radically improve. Is that the literal, is that like a sort of mission statement line, or is that what just you were saying to me?
It's just kind of what I'm saying right now, but it does fit within a sort of that larger tapestry of our mission statement for sure. I mean, rethinking things is our favorite thing to do too. That's my favorite thing to do, is if I hadn't second guessed every decision I make or every move I make since I exited the womb, I don't know that I would be in the position I'm in. But I think that when you're, it's okay to rethink things, even good ideas. It's really a smart thing to try to rethink them and look at them from different angles, because that's how you grow and that's how you get better. And personally love that. I mean, I don't want Maximum Effort, I don't want it to become just another agency. I think if we're not rethinking every single step we make, we will become just another agency. If we are satisfied with just making money, or I don't think that you're going to be a disruptor for very long. You have to kind of continuously innovate and grow and expand and throw all these, you know, I always say you can't be good at something unless you're willing to be bad. And as I've gotten older, I've gotten way more comfortable with not having the answers or the right answers, or saying, I don't know. I think it's such a great, like, as a tool of leadership, being able to say, I don't know, is so important. The worst leaders I've ever worked with or been around are the ones that are sort of steadfast and indignant in their righteousness and really worried about the image around them and within the company and outside of it. So I love saying, I don't know. I love learning about stuff. I love staying curious with stuff. I mean, that's the thing that has been, I think, the greatest asset and gift to hacking culture on occasion, or at least trying to. So
there's a Harvard Business Review piece that I'm completely obsessed with and quote all the time. And it was, it asks the question, or tries to answer the question, why do companies stop innovating? And the answer, at least as proposed by this writer, whose name I should remember considering how many times I reference this piece, is that big companies start as innovators, and then they find something that they're successful at, and then they shift all of their resources and all of their mission away from innovating and towards efficiency. And so the idea becomes, how do we make this thing faster and cheaper, rather than how do we anticipate the disruption of this thing? So that, you know, that's how you become Blockbuster. And so anyway, I say that as a way of asking you, is there some system by which you are building in to the mission, and not just the mission, but it sounds like it has to be in like the literal operations of a company, to say, you know what, we're not going to just become better and better and better at the one thing that we're doing, but we're going to be thinking about how to reinvent this. Like, is there a way in which you've built that into the DNA of the company in any kind of tangible way?
Oh yeah. I mean, everyone that works at the company has different specializations and different interests, which we foster and want to grow. If James, who works at our company, is really interested in one aspect or facet of culture or business, or, you know, I'm not going to be the guy that's like, James, I really need your head over here. I want the people that work at Maximum Effort, I want everybody sort of feeling like they're the CEO. I want everybody pushing toward a direction that is really inspiring for them. And that's worked so far. It's worked really well. I don't pretend to know how exactly the right way to run any company, but I think the people who know how to run companies, they don't either. So I think it's great to stay curious and in the moment in that way. But I also, innovation is always going to be born of curiosity. How do we make something better, not just cheaper or faster? Cheap and fast is great, but it has to be accompanied by something of substance. It has to be accompanied by a goal or a shared or common interest. But like, I really need to underline the fact that like, I genuinely do not know what I'm doing. I love what I'm doing. And I think that that can sometimes paper over or bomb over some of the cuts and wounds or scrapes along the way. But I love everything that we are fortunate enough to get to do and do in a responsible way. And I think a way that my 19 or 20 year old self wouldn't slap me across the face for the way I'm doing right now, the way I'm doing it. But
So Ryan, I've got only a few minutes left. So let me just ask you one more thing. I'm going to ask this broad question that you can apply to what you just said in terms of exploring maximum effort, but also to the marketing that you create. I was interviewing a disruption expert. You know, I said, look, what's the one thing that a company can do to not get disrupted? And he said, be very attentive to where your consumer is going next. And so what you're describing right now is being attentive to where your industry is going to go next, or at least where you can go in your industry. And also, I think that the ads that you're creating they're just really spot on to what the conversation is and what the next step of that conversation could be, right? Like the Peloton ad was an understanding of where you could take that cultural conversation. So I'm just interested in whatever insights you have to offer into how you anticipate that, look for that, read the moment, and what advice you could give to people who are kind of trying to think a step ahead.
Well, I mean, I think you have to a certain degree, you'd be a moron to not acknowledge the now. Obviously, we're steeped in the present, and that the present is where a lot of the business is. But I would say as a company, we talk about 2022 right now. I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about. So nobody saw 2020 coming, obviously, or maybe someone did. But, a global pandemic certainly is going to be a pretty huge zig when everyone else is zagging or think you're going to zag. So we try to do that. It's just that balance of we love culture. And culture is typically very now, but we also love thinking ahead and looking at 2022, a year from now, and where we would like to be and what we would like to be doing and trying to manifest that to the best of our abilities. And I'm really lucky that a lot of the attention lands squarely on me, but that's not why I'm lucky. I'm lucky to have other people that are so immensely talented that I get to spend each and every day with working with, that I want to share some of that spotlight with the George Deweys and the James Tonys and the Molly Alvas, the people that work at my company that are responsible for some of the greatest hits that we've been able to produce, not just for our own company, but for the consumer and our audience.
So that was the conversation with Ryan Reynolds. And there is one more thing, which is I just have to share this. While we were wrapping up, Ryan was walking back to the film set and he said to me,
if you have any follow-up questions, I can hop right on or email you some answers back or whatever works. But I'm
perfect.
Weirdly reachable. So
okay, I appreciate it. Weirdly reachable is a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds, weirdly reachable. I have to say, I just really loved that phrase because I am just such a big believer in people being responsive. And I just can't stand when someone's like, oh, I'm too busy to respond to people. No, come on. Ryan Reynolds is weirdly reachable. Anyone can be reachable. Anyway, big takeaways for me from this conversation is the importance of restrictions and thinking about character, thinking about the person who is at the center of whatever it is you're creating as really the most important element. Also, his idea of bend, not break is just fantastic. You don't need to be pissing people off in order to get a lot of attention. And in fact, even to engage in hot button things, as long as you do it smart in a way that pulls people together. And then finally, I don't know as a leadership phrase. Really, really love that. Anyway, thanks so much again to Ryan Reynolds. I really enjoyed the conversation and I hope that you listening right now did too. And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Problem Solvers wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Monday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And hey, be kind. Pass the show along to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost. And did you solve a problem that would be good for this show? Let me know about it. Visit my website, jasonfeifer.com, JasonFeifer.com, where you can find my contact information and all sorts of other valuable info. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for all your entrepreneurship needs. And even better, subscribe to our magazine, which is just full of the smartest entrepreneurs solving the toughest problems. My name is Jason Feifer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Thanks for listening. And hey, let's go solve some problems.